And that's how social engineering works. People say things that are broadly applicable to millions of people, but look like they might be specific enough to trick someone into opening an attachment.
Welcome back to the Malware Report. This is Gary Thompson. I'm here with Randy Abrams. Well, you know, one of the things that I wonder about is that I've got a number of relatives who received computers for the holidays, and, you know, what should they be concerned about when it comes to malware, either resolutions they need to make or just issues they might have with a brand new computer?
Well, of course, when you get a brand new computer, you want to make sure that it's going to be fun for you, that it's going to be secure. And so one of the things you have to do is educate yourself, become a bit familiar with what your computer can do and what's available for it. But also, you need to take a look at what already came on the computer, because when you get a new computer today, they're usually chock full of all kinds of cool programs. But when it comes to security software, those programs aren't there because the manufacturer thought that that's what would do the best job for you. They're there because a vendor paid the manufacturer some good money to have the program on the computer. And so you want to decide what security software actually is going to be the best for you. And for some people, it might be what came with the new computer, but for others, it may very well be a different package altogether.
Well, how do you make that determination? I mean, do you read about it? Do your own testing? Where would you go to get more information on that?
Well, one place that you can check for antivirus software is Virus Bulletin. It's www.virusbtn.com, and they do a lot of very respected testing of antivirus products. There are a variety of organizations that do reviews of antivirus software, but you got to be careful, because if you just go out on the web looking for reviews, you're just as likely to come up with some dubious products, as in addition to ones that have Virus Bulletin certification and ICSA certification and things like that. You can also check, I mean, if you're a gamer, there's all kinds of forums that gamers talk about things in, including, you know, this antivirus software is so slow that I can't play games, and others will say, you know, I've got a great product that I don't even notice it's there. It doesn't slow me down at all. And you can combine that kind of information with, you know, testing, good quality testing, to come up with an idea of what products might be suitable for you.
You know, the question about gaming is a good one, because I've got a nephew who picked up a computer that's 64-bit, and he wasn't sure that there was any sort of solution out there when it came to antivirus. Are there solutions for 64-bit computers?
Well, ASUS Nod 32 was one of the first to actually support the 64-bit systems before Windows Vista was even released to manufacturing. There are a few. Some of the big ones only support corporate users, which AMD is not making 32-bit systems anymore, so we're getting a lot more non-corporate users using these high-end systems today. So you do need to make sure that you've got a 64-bit solution, because 32-bit solutions just don't work on 32-bit computers.
Well, and I would imagine that size and speed is also a factor. You'd mentioned earlier that, you know, it would slow you down. And again, that was a complaint that he had. Have you heard of anyone who's actually had trouble with online gaming that has slowed the product down enough that they've been concerned?
Well, ASUS commissioned a study to find out, you know, how people are using antivirus software and problems they have. And they found that a lot of people are trying to turn off their antivirus software because it's slowing their computer down too much, and there's a lot of products that will do that. So you've got this high-end system that's really fast to get things done, and generally running antivirus software isn't the thing that you bought it to do. So you need a product that's going to complement your high-end system by having a small footprint, using very few system resources, something that allows your computer to do what you bought it for without bugging you all the time, without making you feel like you just paid $2,000 for a 486.
Right. Yeah. I know my nephew had the same complaint, and was trying to strip off every program that was on there except the few games that he wanted to play. When I have a question in terms of bundling. When I also got a new computer for Christmas, and what I found was that it had a firewall, it had antivirus. I mean, what are the things that I really need on my computer to protect myself?
Well, you certainly need a firewall. Windows XP comes with the firewall that, while it's not the best of breed, you certainly want to turn it on while you're evaluating other firewalls if you decide to get another one. But the firewall doesn't necessarily tell you when you've got malicious software on your computer. So you also need an anti-malware package, something that detects viruses and trojans and worms and so forth, and you need to keep that up to date. I'm a big fan of virtualization technologies. They don't solve all the problems, but they can help. So something like Sandbox IE is a good complement to other security software if you know how to use it and are willing to learn. It's not real difficult, but it does take some learning. You may or may not wish to have additional anti-spam. I find that the spam filters in Outlook catch most of the spam that comes in to me. Other people's mileage may vary. But by and large, spam isn't a real big security problem. However, it's starting to be. We're finding that spammers are now also including malicious software to take control of people's PCs. So probably the biggest defense really is education, is people learning not to open suspicious files and attachments. And when I say suspicious, it doesn't just mean that it came from someone you don't know. If you get something from someone that you do know but you're not expecting it, that's suspicious, because nowadays malicious software will spoof the address that it came from. So it might not have been your friend that sent you that file at all, but it sure looks like it was.
How do you know? I mean, I know that within our corporation, that's a main concern for our IT manager. And, you know, our spam filter works pretty well. But I know today, this morning, I was online and I had three emails that looked legitimate. I tend to delete those without taking the chance that it would infect my computer. But at the same time, and I'm in a service business, so I'm wondering if are any of my clients or customers trying to get through to me. Is there any way that you can tell, aside from opening it up, that you shouldn't be, opening a specific email?
Well, it's a lot more difficult when it comes to whether or not you should open a specific email. And keeping your system patched is absolutely critical. All your other security measures aren't going to help out a bunch if you don't keep the system patched. If you keep your system patched and up to date, you're generally really safe opening the email, but not the attachment.
Ah.
So if you open the email, context is really critical. Okay. What you want to look for is this email actually directly to me? And that doesn't mean does it have your name, because names are out on the internet. It's really easy to fill in a name. But, you know, if I send you an email or you get an email that looks like it's from me that says, here's an attachment about what we were discussing, well, that doesn't really tell you anything.
Mm-hmm.
Millions and millions of people have discussions every day.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if I tell you, you know, here's an attachment about the podcast dealing with vulnerabilities on Apple Macintosh computers,
right.
You know, that's pretty specific. Mm-hmm. You've got some context there, and it makes sense that it's coming from me if we've already talked about it. If I just send you an email out of the blue saying, here's some more information about problems with browsers, well, we haven't even discussed that. You know, there's no reason for me to say it out of the blue unless I'm including a whole bunch more information that gives you the context that says, this is a person who actually has talked to me about something that's relevant here. It's got, you know, information that makes it specific that nobody would just be able to write a template and say, here you go. You know, I used the social engineering tactic when I was doing some training at Microsoft one time, and I sent out an email. I told people about a training session. I sent out an email saying, about the meeting, and it had an attachment, details.txt.vbs. And it said, here's some more information, hope to see you there. And if people ran the attachment, it just popped up a message box saying, if you're reading this, you really need the training. But the point was, people have meetings all the time. I didn't say anything like what the meeting was about. Mm-hmm. It was just about the meeting. And that's how social engineering works. People say things that are broadly applicable to millions of people, but look like they might be specific enough to trick someone into opening an attachment.
But that's really good information. And I, you know, it occurs to me that IT managers probably want to tell employees that the other side of the coin is that when you send out an email, you ought to be a little more specific about what the attachment's all about. I know I've been guilty of doing the same thing, sort of just sending an attachment saying, here it is. I mean, literally, that's all I've said, here it is. And it sounds like I need to be a lot more thoughtful about, you know, here is the you know, the white paper we discussed yesterday, just to help people understand that. So there is a degree of etiquette, I suppose, with an email that would also help protect networks, corporations, and individuals on, you know, how their malware can be managed. One last question that I had for you was, so it is the new year, the IT manager out there is faced with dummies like me, I'll admit it, who got a great software game during the holidays and loaded it onto my company laptop, something I know I'm not supposed to do, but I always consider it to be my own as opposed to the company's, fool that I am. And then I come in and log on to the network, and inevitably the IT manager comes in with his hair on fire saying, what have you done now? What can IT managers do to determine if, laptops have been brought back into the system after the holidays that may have programs, applications, attachments, whatever, that might create a problem for the network?
Well, first off, the companies need to have a clear policy that's well communicated to the employees. It's got to be clear that this is not acceptable. Additionally, there are a variety of things that an administrator can do. One of the things are software policies. I know Microsoft's Active Directory and servers and products allow administrators, if they wish to go as far as whitelisting programs, saying only these applications can run. That's pretty drastic and takes a lot of management. But there are also software packages that will audit computers and report back what's installed. And from there, it's pretty quick to run a difference program to say, you know, we know these programs are allowed to be there. What's there that isn't allowed to be there? And so they can audit what's on the computers as soon as they get onto the network.
Well, that's great. I've really enjoyed the discussion today. Once again, why don't you give your email address for those people who may have additional questions on this subject?
Certainly. You can email askeset@eset.com. We've set this up. If you want to hear anything in particular on podcasts or have questions about existing podcasts or other questions, feel free to contact me at askeset@eset.com.
Terrific. Thanks again, Randy. And this has been the Malware Report.